Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. and you are tuned into Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka. Today is Monday, November 18th, 2013. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. A Washington State man has been fined $10,000 and will possibly forfeit his boat after pleading guilty to unregistered sport fish guiding in Sitka Superior Court in October. KCAW's Emily Foreman reports on the extensive law enforcement operation undertaken by state troopers last year.
State wildlife troopers in 2012 conducted a four-day sting operation against William Davison from Anacortes, Washington, who guided fishing trips without a license in Sitka. Troopers Eric Hinton and Justin Lindell, posing as brothers-in-law, booked a four-day, three-night guided fishing trip with William Davison in June of that year. Hinton explained the details in Sitka Superior Court last month.
Well, before we start an undercover operation like this, me and the fellow investigator need to come up with a story as to how we know each other. We need to know family members. You certainly don't want to make a mistake when you're talking with a suspect. When you're undercover, it's a little nerve-wracking, really. The longer the trip is, the more difficult it is to keep your cover story.
Davison pleaded guilty to four counts: sport fishing without a license, sport fish guiding with an unregistered vessel, furnishing shellfish to sport fishing clients, specifically king crab, and unlawful possession of sport-caught fish. In total, these misdemeanors carried a maximum fine of $40,000 and 4 months jail time. But in exchange for his guilty plea, the court charged Davison $10,000 and suspended all jail time and most of the fines. Hinton's testimony recounted additional details of the trip. He says prior to boarding the boat, Davison admitted he was not a licensed guide, but was licensed by the Coast Guard. That means he can't guide fishing tours, but can carry passengers.
He asked us if we were okay with that. We said that we were, and he then said, well, I need to come up with a cover story between me and him as to how we met, and he suggested that we fished off of a charter out of Miami. I asked him to change that to Key West, Florida, because I knew a legitimate charter business down there that we could use.
Over 4 days, the group caught one halibut, 14 king salmon, 3 king crab, and 25 Dungeness crab. Since Lindell and Hinton were posing as non-residents, the bag limit for king salmon is 4 fish per year, per person, and 1 fish per day. Davison's group was averaging 3.5 king salmon a day. The group also harvested an 8 crab on board, which is also illegal.
We recorded fish when Mr. Davison told us to record fish. On the first day, he instructed Investigator Lindell not to record the fish because he didn't think that state troopers were nearby. And he said, if we do get stopped by fishing game, just say that you're either fishing for halibut or you're just trolling for catch and release.
If troopers did approach the boat, Davison planned to toss unlawfully caught fish in a hidden hold in the bottom of his boat.
The secret compartment doesn't have any hinges on it, so you can't see anything sticking up out of the deck. He had L brackets that came down and fit underneath a spar on the deck of the boat to hold it in place. And in order to open up or unlock that one hatch, that secret hatch in the middle, he had to get a screwdriver or a knife or something, and he would pry that thing back so he could get his fingers around it, and then he'd pull it out, and that would unlock it. So when he closed it and relocked it, he would take a towel, and he'd take an outdoor rug, and he'd throw it over the top so that it didn't look like it was anything. It just looked like it was the deck.
A month after the undercover fishing trip, wildlife trooper Robert Welsh showed up at Davison's boat with seizure and search warrants. Welsh says Davison's fishing license had expired. Davison told Welsh that he didn't have a sport fishing license but didn't need one because he never guided paid clients, only friends and family. Welsh spoke with one other person that had paid Davison for a trip after being referred by a friend. Shirley Erst, who has known Davison for 50 years, testified on his behalf. Erst told the court that Davison does not earn a living fishing and has never been in trouble before. She said she will make certain Davison's boat will not return to Alaska. While the fine is settled, Davison faces 3 years of probation and the possible seizure of his vessel. The terms of his probation and forfeiture of his vessel will be determined in December. In Sitka, I'm Emily Foreman.
Sea cucumber fishing is winding down for commercial divers in southeast Alaska. There is another opening today, but the fleet is very close to reaching its overall quota. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is reporting a catch of just over 1,464,000 pounds to date. Justin Brees is assistant area management biologist in Ketchikan.
We have about 1.5 million pounds harvested, but there's that includes some areas that went over their GHLs a little bit, and so there's still approximately 70,000 pounds down here in the Ketchikan area to be harvested and a little bit left up in the Juneau area.
Divers get short weekly openings to target cucumbers. Each fishing area is closed once the fleet reaches the guideline harvest level, or GHL, there. The first opening was October 7th. Brees says this year's cucumber price has averaged around $5 a pound.
Which is pretty good, and it drew quite a few people out, and that's one of the reasons that some of the smaller areas got a little bit more effort than they were anticipating in several different smaller areas.
Nearly 200 divers have participated in this year's sea cucumber fishery. It will be at least a year before state-sponsored wolf trapping programs in two areas of southeast Alaska could begin. The Board of Game in March authorized predator control programs to help boost deer numbers near Ketchikan and Petersburg. However, state game managers say they are still collecting information on deer and wolf populations before deciding whether to go ahead with the wolf kills or other options. Joe Viknicki reports.
Alaska's Board of Game last March approved proposals to authorize two predator control programs, one on Gravina Island near Ketchikan and the other on the islands around Petersburg. State-sponsored predator control is one of the options that the state's intensive management law allows for improving low numbers of deer, moose, or caribou. Other steps can include hunting restrictions and habitat work. Managers are supposed to first investigate what caused the populations to drop. Doug Larson, regional supervisor for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Wildlife Division, says Fish and Game is still collecting information on the problem.
When we met with the board in spring of 2013, so just this last spring, we made it clear to them that this data gathering process was going to take at least through 2013 and into the spring of 2014 and summer of 2014. And so the earliest that we would even consider doing any kind of active program on the ground would be the fall of 2014.
The predator control approach that the state may use would involve paying experienced trappers to kill all of the Gravina wolves and 80% of the wolves near Petersburg on Mitkoff and Wolwoodski Islands, as well as the Lindenberg Peninsula of Kuprinoff Island. There's been support among Southeast hunters for the programs. However, they also prompted written comments from opponents around the globe who urged the state not to kill wolves. State biologists drafted a feasibility analysis for the program in each area after years of low deer harvests. Larson says Fish and Game is trying to find out more about the deer numbers.
The bottom line is we need to have some indicators, some information in hand with which to assess what is causing deer numbers to be at low levels. Is it weather related? Is it vegetation, habitat related? Is it predator related? If it's predators, is it wolves? Is it bears? Is it a combination? So there's a number of variables that in our feasibility assessment we pointed out and told the board that it was our intent and remains our intent now to gather information that would help inform those decisions.
Larson says examples of information gathering efforts include testing whether DNA in deer droppings can inform the department about population numbers. He also says Fish and Game is looking at habitat quality in the areas proposed for intensive management.
So what we've done this last summer was we implemented a pilot effort to look at vegetation on Gravina Island, where we set up some specific plots, looked at the amount of shrubs and forbs that are available versus what have been browsed, so we could get a better sense for, well, is the amount of food here conducive to allowing for more animals to be here, or are these habitats at the extent of what they can support?
The department also hopes to deploy remote cameras for capturing deer, wolves, and bear in the areas and help with population estimates. Larson says Fish and Game staff will return to the Board of Game sometime next year with results of the various studies to agree on the next step. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Viknicki.
Bids will go out this winter to build a tribal house in Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve. Glacier Bay is the former southeast home of four Huna Tlingit clans until ice began advancing around 5,000 years ago. The Tlingit people moved and built new villages, including the largest, Huna, about 30 miles southeast. After ice receded, the area became a national park and not open to resettlement. Master carver Gordon Greenwald, a retired Huna shop and art teacher, is leading the carving effort. He says the design will represent the four clans as best it can. Bids will be let this winter, and construction should start on the $4 million project in the park's Bartlett Cove area next spring. Completion is scheduled for 2016. And Alaska's congressional delegation has introduced bills that would clarify that it's okay for Alaska natives to sell artwork adorned with bird feathers. Under the legislation introduced by Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski and Representative Don Young, some traditional Alaska native arts and crafts would be exempt from a provision of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, barring the sale of items containing the feathers and non-edible parts of migratory birds. That issue began receiving attention after the case of Archie Kavanaugh, a well-respected Tlingit artist, fined $2,200 for trying to sell a headdress adorned with feathers. A spokeswoman for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says giving a financial incentive to harvesting bird feathers through the sale of art could lead to illegal bird hunting. And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. It's 21 degrees in downtown Sitka under fair skies. You can expect a mostly sunny day today with highs around 26 degrees and northeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour diminishing in the afternoon. It should be mostly clear tonight with lows 15 to 21 and northeast winds 10 miles per hour. Expect a slight chance of snow tomorrow morning, then snow is likely in the afternoon. Snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches and highs around 29, east winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Stay tuned for the Morning Edition interview at 8:18. Jeff Budd will be in to talk with you about the Sitka Fair. We're going to rejoin National Public Radio. You are listening to Morning Edition over KCAW Sitka. Have a good morning.